Welcome to Beekeeping Today Podcast, presented by Bee Culture. Beekeeping Today Podcast is your source for beekeeping news, information, and entertainment. I'm Jeff Ott.
And I'm Kim Flatham.
Hey, Jeff and Kim. Today's sponsor is Global Patties. They're a family-operated business that manufactures protein supplement patties for honeybees. It's a good time to think about honeybee nutrition. Feeding your hive's protein supplement patties will ensure that they produce strong and healthy colonies by increasing brood production and overall honey flow. Now is a great time to consider what type of patty is right for your area and your honeybees. Global offers a variety of standard patties as well as custom patties to meet your needs. No matter where you are, Global is ready to serve you out of their manufacturing plants in Airdrie, Alberta, and in Butte, Montana, or from distribution depots across the continent. Visit them today at www.globalpatties.com.
Hey, thanks a lot, Sherry, and thank you, Global Patties, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. You know, each week we get to talk about how much we appreciate our sponsor support. They help make all of this happen and provide us the ability to bring you each episode. With that, thanks to Bee Culture Magazine for continuing their presenting sponsorship of this podcast. Bee Culture has been the magazine for American beekeeping since 1873. Subscribe to Bee Culture today, and while you're there, check out Bee Culture's Beekeeping Your First 3 Years quarterly magazine for beginning beekeepers. We also want to thank 2 Million Blossoms as sponsor of this episode. 2 Million Blossoms is a quarterly magazine dedicated to protecting all pollinators. Learn more in our Season 2, Episode 9 podcast with our editor and our guest co-host, Kirsten Trainer, and from visiting www.2millionblossoms.com, and that is with a number 2. Hey, everybody, thanks again for joining us. We have a fun interview all set in this episode with Benedictus of Bee Downtown, but more on that in a minute. Hey, Kim, how's your morning going?
It's dark. It's single digits. There's snow on the ground, and I'm very tired of winter. How's that?
Well, you still have a month and a half to go, buddy.
I know. It's going to be a long winter.
What are your bees doing, speaking of winter? Have you seen any activity? You see any flying on the sunny days?
I went out and looked a couple of days ago, and I'm not seeing any outside, any of the hives. That could be good or bad, and I'm not going to go in and look. So yeah. I'll wait until we get a much warmer day before I take a look. I rapped on a couple of them, and I heard a low buzz. So maybe they're doing okay.
Buzz, keep away from us. It's too cold. Yeah, it's kind of fun here. As I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago or last episode, the what they call the beak hazelnut is in bloom or in pollen with the little cascals. And the bees are working that on the sunny but cold days. I'm surprised to see them flying at about 43. They start flying around 43 degrees.
Oh, and yeah, it's cold.
Yeah, it's cold. But in the sun, I guess they're finding it fine. And monitoring the internal hive temperatures, I see it creeping up. So I know that there's some activity in the hives, and I'm looking forward to spring. Now I got to start worrying about making sure they've got food to get them through the end of the spring.
Hey, let me tell you something about that, Jeff. You know, the other podcast that we've got going, Honey Bee Obscura with Jim Tu and myself.
Yeah.
The next show that we've got coming out, I think it's going to be this week, is Emergency Winter Feeding. So if you've got an issue with, you don't know if you're going to have to feed, or you know you're going to have to feed, how do you do it in the middle of winter? Take a, you know, listen in on this one, because Jim and I come up with some kind of good ideas, I think.
You guys are doing a fantastic job on that brand new podcast, and I encourage our listeners, if you haven't heard it yet, to go out and sign up and subscribe and listen to Kim here and Dr. Jim too talk about all things honeybees.
Yeah, we've got, well, like I said, emergency winter feeding. We've got off-season storage. Where do you put all that equipment in the summer? You know, I used to have a garage, and that kind of went away. Midwinter inspections coming up. That's something else you're going to have to worry about. Yeah. And what kind of equipment are you going to use this next season? We've got that coming up too. So these are some topics that both Jim and I enjoy talking about. We've got some different insights into how we make our decisions, and listen in. You'll probably pick up something, and certainly I picked up something listening to Jim.
You know, that'll be fun. This is this time of year we start receiving all the bee supply catalogs. So having an episode on Honey Bee Obscure talking about the different types of equipment will help me out, and what I need to spend my money on and what I may not need to spend my money on.
And how to save your back.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. Well, Kim, speaking of websites, and we do have our brand new website we started out this month with on the Beekeeping Today podcast. So I encourage our listeners, if you haven't been out to our website in the last several weeks, to make sure you go out and check it out. We have the capability now to add more features, more functionality. So check it out each week. Sign up for our newsletter. We'll be kicking out a new newsletter here shortly and keep all the listeners up to date on all the latest happenings of Beekeeping Today podcast, and even find out a little bit more about HBO or Honeybee Obscura too.
You know, Jeff, the thing that you added that I like the most is that I can leave you a voice message.
Yeah, Kim, you need to quit doing that. you can phone me. That is true. The new website does have the capability for our listeners, Kim, to leave us voice messages. That's a pretty handy feature. If you're like me, you just get tired of typing on the computer at times, leave a voicemail. That's pretty nice. Hey, Kim, you have a book review for us. Why don't you tell us about that, and then we'll get right into our interview with Ben Dictus from Bee Downtown, and on with our show.
Jeff, I got a review here today for a brand new book that's just come out. It's by David McFaun. You know, he's a popular writer for both Bee Culture and the American Bee Journal. The title of the book is Applied Beekeeping in the United States. It's published by and available from Outskirts Press at www.outskirtspress.com. It's the most all-inclusive book I think I've ever seen. It is, let me tell you about it. You know, like I said, you probably recognize the author of this work because he's a regular contributor to both Bee Culture, Beekeeping Your First 3 Years, and the American Bee Journal. The contents of this book are taken from contributions to these journals, plus contributions to his local beekeeping newsletter and some independent and brand new material. There's also a good deal of information not previously published and is new to the reader. He's active in the master beekeeping world, having reached that title in several organizations, and he's been active with bees for over 50 years, primarily in the southeastern U.S. The topics covered and the information provided in this book are pretty straightforward, but the detail surrounding most of these is pretty intense. Of the 342 pages, Jeff, there are 246 photos showing and explaining the topics in the 49 chapters. Some chapters are actually only photos and the captions that go with them. This book is rich in making sure the reader understands each and every step of each procedure or technique that is explained. More, I can easily say, than any book on bees and beekeeping I've reviewed on these pages in over 34 years. Now, I got to tell you one thing, Jeff. One of the reasons that the book that I put out there, Backyard Beekeeping, has done so well over the years is because the number of photos that we included. Photos are important, and this book is rich in them. Though many of the chapters have been published previously, as I said, almost always the magazines they appeared in did not have the room to publish all of the photos sent with the article, and certainly not the room to use several full-page photos. I quit counting after only a short time the number of full-page photos in this book. As an example, the chapter on installing a package is 15 pages long, and 14 of them are only a huge photo and the caption. I'm impressed with the publisher who designed this book. You know, this book isn't just for beginners, though, Jeff. It goes all the way from smoker fuel to moving hives to installing packages to summer management to overwintering nukes to laying workers to making candles, collecting pollen, and to sales and marketing and beekeeping finance. Even if you'll never consider beekeeping as a business, the chapter on finance is worth the time because you can easily get lost in how much money this hobby can cost. There's something here for every level beekeeper, and if you're just starting out, you'll have advice for every step of your journey. Though the author has spent most of his beekeeping time in the southeast part of the U.S., like I said earlier, Jeff, the information in this book pretty much covers the whole U.S. If there's any area not fully covered, it would be the desert southwest part of the country, but most of this can be applied even there.
Hello, beekeepers. Your honeybees face a lot of challenges out there. Unbalanced food sources from monoculture crops, holding yards, drought, food shortages, antibiotics, pesticides, and pathogens like chalkroot. To overcome these challenges, your bees need the multiple bacteria that are in all nectars, pollens, and the environment. These bacteria aid honeybees' digestion and improve your honeybees' response and resilience to pesticides. Now you can help improve your honey colony health with a quick, easy, and safe-to-use product. Strong Microbials Super DFM Honeybee uses naturally occurring bacteria to restore the healthy gut biome of your honeybees. Check them out today at www.strongmicrobials.com.
All right, welcome back. With us right now is Ben Dictus from Bee Downtown. Welcome, Ben.
Great to be here.
It's nice to meet you, Ben.
We found you, or you found us. Your program is really interesting, and how you are incorporating. We've had other guests on our show talking about working with corporations and companies and using their properties for placing beehives and yards. But you're one of the first companies we've talked to and run across that actually are incorporating the bees into a leadership training program, that whole methodology. So grouping everything together sounds like a great mix, and look forward to hearing from you.
Actually, it sounds kind of complicated.
That's bees for you.
several very diverse activities going on here. I encourage people to take a look at your webpage and see all of the things that you're involved in, some pretty high-level leadership programs, drawing on how bees in a beehive kind of make things work in a beehive. I guess, Ben, let's just go start at the bottom. Tell us about what you do with bees.
So I'm the beekeeper for the North Carolina branch specifically. We have an Atlanta branch as well. And so I keep the bees, but at Bee Downtown, no one really has just one job. We all wear many, many hats. So we keep the bees and also develop programming around the bees for the companies we work with. So it's many things. It's mostly bees, but program development, program execution as well.
And how many colonies are you running?
We have about 150 colonies in North Carolina, and I want to say 60, 70 in Atlanta.
That's a good size operation. So all of these bees in both places are on a building somewhere?
In North Carolina, about 100 are at partner sites, and nearly all of them in Atlanta are at partner sites. Are they all on buildings? Not necessarily. In Atlanta, there's actually, I don't think, any on rooftops. Here in North Carolina, there's five different partners that either have observation hive or rooftop hives.
You mentioned partners and sites. What is that? Who are these people?
Yeah, so it's anyone that is interested in working with us and putting bees on their property. Mostly these are larger corporations, organizations, but there are some smaller one and individuals as well. But so our partners are interested in connecting with bees, connecting with the natural world, and our programming. So anyone that's interested in that sort of thing is someone we'd work with.
So if I was a corporation in North Carolina and I was convinced that what you were doing was a good thing and I should be doing it in my organization, how would I go about that?
Jump on the website, send us an email at your info or at the info account, and someone will get back to you very, very rapidly. And then the process is we discuss, we've been through many, many legal counsel meetings because that's always where things used to get hung up, but we have a great track record now, and all that stuff is sorted out. But so you send an email to that info account, and then we start to see what we can do for you, what a partnership means, what you get out of it, if it's a right fit, and go from there.
Can you share some of the companies you're working with?
Yeah, I should know this off the. I can share the North Carolina companies very easily.
Certainly.
So we're working with SAS. We are at Murphy's Naturals. What are some of the new ones? We're at Delta and Delta Airlines in Atlanta and Chick-fil-A in Atlanta. See if I can pull up a list here as I'm talking to you. Capital Broadcast is one, Research, RTI, Cox, American Tobacco, Burt's Bees is a big one, Cisco, nice. Invesco, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Georgia Power, I think I said Chick-fil-A. Those are some of the big ones.
Yeah, and I saw MetLife, I think.
MetLife. Their bees did really excellent last year and made some really wonderful honey.
So you have bees at these sites. And the corporations that you're working with invited you there. You worked out an arrangement of where to put them. My guess is that you do all the beekeeping?
Yeah, so we install and maintain them. And by we, it's me and a guy named Harrison here. So we work with them to find the best spot. This is a good spot for the bees. It's aesthetically pleasing. It's easy for some of these organizations have large campuses, 20, 30, 40, 100 acre properties. So you could tuck the bees in the back corner, but then no one's going to see them. So we work with facilities teams, find a great spot for them, great spot for us as beekeepers, install the bees. There's usually a big event around the bees. So that allows the organization to build some excitement, get some press releases. It's an activity. It's a fun, engaging event for their employees. Then the bees are installed. We take care of them. Pre-COVID, we would do several hive tours throughout the year. We did some virtual things and made some changes there. But we'll do hive tours, in-person events. We take care of them, manage their health. And then when honey harvest time comes, we harvest the honey and bottle and deliver the honey.
Do they keep the honey themselves? And how does that work? How do they sell that internally, or do they just give it away?
That's we work with people, and there's different ways that it's done. So it's a bit of a headache as a beekeeper because we keep all that honey separate. So. There's about 35 partners, 100 hives in North Carolina. So MetLife has three hives. They get the honey from those three hives. So they're tasting the honey from their campus. We're very serious about that and make sure that they get their honey. So it creates an extra layer of work, but we're happy to do it. How they divvy it out. So MetLife, as the example today, there's many employees, 4,000 or 5,000 employees and three hives worth of honey. It doesn't matter how much honey they make. There's not going to be enough. Yeah. So what are some creative, SAS actually a year or two ago, it was Bandwidth in Raleigh. They knew it was going to go fast. So they auctioned it off.
Oh, nice.
And some of them went for like $20, $40, $50 because everyone's so excited about the bees. Other people say, we're going to sell it on this day. They sell out the first day. Other people give it as gifts, if there's a business meeting to sweeten the deal, if you will. Mm-hmm. So how they want to use it. RTP Frontier works with a brewery every year and then serves the beer at their happy hour. So a lot of creative, cool ways. The last beer they did pre-COVID was a Braggot, and they called it Swarm Trooper. So I love that one.
That is good.
Do any of the employees in these places get involved to the point of helping you work your bees?
There are many employees that would like to do that. It's difficult running around in the spring and when the bees are on and on hard to coordinate with people. So I got 35 sites that I'm trying to visit. And if someone's 10 minutes late, 15 minutes late, that starts impacting my day. So I used to do some of that stuff and I wish I could do more. but it's just too difficult to manage. I'm happy to help. I respond to emails. People that are interested, I direct them to the local association, answer any question I can, answer every phone call. But coordinating and getting people in the hives outside of the scheduled hive tours has been a bit of a logistical.
Yeah, I can imagine. Herding cats.
Or cats herding cats.
You bring up a good point. Going back to the working with facilities and everything, a lot of the corporate campuses I've been on, it's just, you know, the flat green carpet of grass and very, from a beekeeper standpoint, sterile, except for maybe a dandelion here, there, or a little bit of clover. Are you working with any of them to establish pollinator gardens as well?
I would say most of them. Okay. That's one of the, you know, one of the first meetings I have is with facilities team. As the beekeeper, other teammate members are meeting with executives and people that administer these employee engagement programs. But I'll meet with the facilities staff, talk to those that cut the grass. Like, this is, we put a barrier around them, but this is how you should act around the bees. You know, don't spray things on bees. Don't spray things near bees. What are you spraying? Can we reduce that? And often that question is asked, like, people get excited about it. It's a fun thing. It's new. It's different. They want to learn about it. And what can we plant that will help the bees? Mm-hmm. It's a hard sell because, yes, a lot of the corporate campuses are these. They're pretty, but they are deserts, just green grass. Yeah. And no one has listened to me yet when I said, you know, pull it all up and plant this. But we give people lists of native plants for North Carolina. And people plant them, so it's you know, tipping the scale in the right direction slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Interesting. We've talked of other people who've gone through that same I don't want to say argument, but that same trying to get people to change that green. I think you used the word deadly. That's pretty close to what it is: deadly green carpet out there into something that's useful for the bees. The other half of your operation is, you mentioned the people talking to the corporate people, and this is your organization is strong in leadership training. And how do those two mesh? I got four hives out in the lawn, and I've got people doing leadership classes.
Yeah, I think to understand where leadership came from, it's helpful to understand how Bee Downtown has evolved over time. So when Bee Downtown started, it was putting bees on buildings, it started at American Tobacco Campus, put some bees on a roof. Our founder, Lee Catherine Bonner, put some bees at her intern site. And then across the street was Bird's Bees. They wanted bees, so they got bees. And when people have bees nearby, they go check them out. And they want to know more. They want to see the bees up close. So we started doing hive tours as a response to that. And then, you know, we want to learn more about the honey harvesting process. We want to learn more about beekeeping. So then we did beekeeping classes. We did honey harvesting events. And it just keeps evolving and people want more and more. So it's business-wise been easy because when people, hey, we want to do this. Okay, we can do that. And through the hive tours and through doing this for several years, the leadership portion of it sort of just emerged because we'd be doing these hive tours, talking about bee behavior as a social insect. And people would be like, oh man, could you imagine if we did that in the office? If we all worked together like these bees, or, you know, say something about the queen, like, oh, could you imagine if our manager acted like that? So it's just kind of this like light bulb went off, and, We got some connected with some very skilled leadership development people. Colonel Joe LaBeouf from Duke, Patty Beechler, who does leadership trainings up in Pennsylvania, New York area, to help us develop the program. And that's kind of where it came from and how it's happened.
Interesting. I know I was looking at some of the programs that you have, 1 and 2 day programs. That you sponsor. So if I'm a corporation and I want to have a One of the programs you have is, it's called Moments That Matter, and it's storytelling. And it's using storytelling to get the message across and to convince people that here's a new technique or a different technique that might work here. Who does that? How does a corporation manage to get that organized?
Yeah, so that one in particular. So Lee Catherine is an amazing storyteller. So that's kind of her baby. It depends if this corporation organization already has bees or if they just want to do the storytelling. If they already have bees, then we schedule a day, show up, do some prep work around storytelling, open the bees, have some specific things we want to talk about. And really the bees do a lot of the heavy lifting, a lot of the work as they usually do. And people are just inspired by bees. So we cover certain topics, go back into the classroom, talk about what we saw and weave in how work on different skills related to storytelling. So if it is a business that has bees already with us, it's just a matter of scheduling the day and the time. They're probably already used to doing hive tours. If it's a business that we've never worked with yet, Lenovo is an example. They're here in the Triangle. We brought four hives over there, found an area, worked with the facilities team, put the hives over there for about a week, and then did the event. And then a week later, took the bees out.
Interesting. Well, you've got many leadership classes that I see that go on here, and you've got a lot of different talented people doing these things. So my guess is that if a corporation, let's say, wants to do the Storyteller or Hives the Thrive program, what they're going to do is if they're already working with you and you've got bees there, then that's just a continuation of the program. But there's got to be a cost to that.
There is. It depends. If it's a business that already has bees, they certainly get a break, or it might be already worked into their contract that, hey, we want to do a storytelling event every year. Or if it isn't and they want to add it on, they get it at very much a reduced rate. And if it's someone that isn't interested in us, there's a whatever the cost is, it usually comes with a, you'll get a discounted rate if you actually you do this and then you decide to get bees. And the cost is variable for each of those. It depends on business size and a lot of different factors. But it's pretty on par for what those sorts of trainings would cost you otherwise. It's just you get the added benefit of getting outside and working with bees in the process.
Interesting. And I suppose for these corporations, just having those six colonies sit over on the left side of the parking lot over there, there is a like a maintenance fee that you guys arrange?
If they are one of our partners?
Yeah.
So there's a contract. It's usually a 2 or 3 year contract. And it's a lump sum that Lee Catherine and our financial guy, Paul, figure out, and it deals with everything. So whatever needs to happen to keep those hives healthy, to keep them in place, is wound into that contract fee. And so with that, maybe they say, we have certain partners that are like, we just want to do 10 hive tours. We have 3,000 employees. We want them all to see the bees. We want that as an option. Other people or other organizations might say, we're not so interested in the hive tours. We'll do one or two, but we want a big grand opening event and we want to do a big honey harvest event. It depends on needs and wants for different folks.
Complicated contracts.
It is. And I'm glad I don't know much about that. I'm just the bee guy. I do hive tours and I deliver programs. And that's already quite a bit.
Yeah.
It sounds like you mentioned keeping the bees alive and well. I can't imagine this happening with you as the beekeeper, but sometimes hives go away and don't come back. They die or they swarm. So all of that is written into the contract. If a hive expires over winter, I'm going to replace it with new bees. And in the meantime, I'm going to be treating it with all of the right stuff to keep it healthy and alive?
Yep, most definitely. So we manage mites, we treat for mites, because if you don't, then yeah, you're not going to have bees. And the bees don't make it through the winter. We replace them as soon as possible in the spring. We work hard in the spring and make sure they're queen right. We're visiting about once a week. If they're trying to swarm, we're making adjustments. But there, at those 100 partner sites, there are bees all the time.
You just mentioned an interesting topic. One of your partners calls you up and says, "I got a swarm the size of a Volkswagen hanging off the roof of my entrance. Can you do something about this?"
Or my CEO's car.
I'll be there in 5 minutes if it's that big. That is woven into, and two fun things I can say about this. So first is people learn it's one of my favorite things about Bee Downtown. People learn that we can live side by side with bees. American Tobacco Campus, our first partner, they call us. It's a routine now. They know if it's too high for me, they bring a bucket. So
wow.
It's on a bush right next to the building. They're like, "Ben," they'll have it roped off, have a security guard there. I show up, collect the swarm, leave. But yes, we immediately respond if there's a swarm call. But they understand it. It's a fun thing. Everyone that lives and works there, like, "Oh, there's a swarm." We send out an email and say, "Hey, if you find a swarm, you get a T-shirt, you get a jar of honey, your choice." Nice. So it's a fun thing. People are out there looking. new partners, you know, there's a little bit of stress in the beginning, but after they've been through it a year or two, they realize it's, you know, circle of life, part of nature. It's what happens. We do our best to prevent swarming, but at the same time, bees want to swarm. It's what they do. It happens. So we deal with it and we respond to it. The second interesting thing in there is, so this last year, I think I got 18 swarms.
Wow.
The year before it was 36 or 37.
Wow.
And what you have to realize is a lot of these are really public places with a lot of eyes on them, eyes at all points in the day. So if they swarm, we get a call. We know they swarmed. And it was interesting to see the decrease in the number of swarms I caught this year, which was probably because no one was in the office.
Is my guess.
I like to think it's because I kept the bees better. But
that's what you should.
The reality is people weren't there to see it.
Yeah. Well, you're being too truthful. I would have said, yeah, it's because I'm doing such a great job.
Getting better every year. Yeah, I don't know if I'm that good yet.
I went from 36 down to 18 in 1 year. I'm great. I was looking at the website and we're talking about the hives. Some of them are really painted nicely and the companies do their own decorations. So is that part of the project?
Absolutely. It's the front end is very loaded with a lot of work for everyone. We work with different artists. We have an in-house artist right now, a college student that's taking off during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But we find different artists. It's very interesting to see how some of these corporations, you know, they have strict, these are the exact colors we use. Others just paint some flowers, do whatever. But they all have a unique process. But it's a wonderful thing. They're beautiful. The artwork all has to stay together. You have to put the hives on in exactly the same way or the art doesn't look good. But it is helpful for the bees, the visual complexity. It minimizes drift, and they look great. So it's part of the process.
So that's part of your process. You provide the artist, or do you give the boxes to the company and then they have a work party painting?
If they have a work party and they feel like they want to do that, we wouldn't stand in the way, but typically we have some artists we're connected with. They might give us the design and very specifically use these exact colors. But for the most part, we've painted all of them.
And you guys have a podcast program, interestingly.
We did. It's on a bit of a break. I don't think we put out a new episode in a couple months. But we did start a podcast, and it is something we're hoping to get going again. we really had to shift gears with COVID because so much of what we did was in-person interactions. People love to do things in person. And, you know, especially after doing a million Zoom calls this year, no one wants to sit on another Zoom call. But we did so much in person. We had to shift gears. The podcast definitely fell to the wayside because we turned all of our program virtual, do honey tastings, the hive tours virtually. There's a whole section that partners have access to. There's activities for kids. So we do have a podcast, but I'll say there's probably 10 episodes and it hasn't been updated in 6 months or so.
All right. Well, I'm always a promoter of other podcasts that deal with bees and beekeeping and all of the like. So I guess folks can tune in and see if you get started up again once all of this craziness is over. One of the other things that I was interested in your whole program, if you take three steps back and look at the whole program, the leadership part of it, the involvement with bees and beekeepers and the people who work for the companies that are your partners. At the end of the day, what's the goal?
What's the goal? I think connecting people and connecting people to the natural world, to the agricultural world, and making those small little changes that can improve the world we live in. I actually asked the team, as I knew we were doing this podcast, I was like, I always say that, but can someone give me a tangible example? Because I'm never good with examples. And one that someone sent to me and reminded me of was, so we've been working with Cox in Atlanta. They do lots of different things, automotive, communication, telecommunication stuff. They love their bees over there. They do lots of tours, lots of things virtually. And, you know, so what's this little improvement that was made? So they, when someone took a tour and was like, hey, you know what, we have this bee problem where when people go around and, you know, the little boxes on the side of the road, telecommunications boxes, they get filled with bees sometimes. And all we've ever done is just spray chemicals in and kill them. And this lady was like, I saw the beehives and we are changing that. And so she instituted some policy, a procedure. Hey, if you're a guy and you're out in the field or a gal out in the field and you're going to work and there's bees in there, this is what you do now. And they call a local beekeeper. There's a whole process. And countrywide, it was like 140 or 150 colonies that, you know, local beekeepers, wherever it was, were called. And this all started because a lady at Cox went on a hive tour and was like, oh, these are amazing creatures. And, you know, 2 days ago, it was a thing that, oh, yeah, there's bees sometimes when the guys go to do work. And I just say, go buy a can of spray and kill them so you can do your work. You know, and that's led to people responding to these bees in these weird spots in a much better way. And then SAS is another great example. So SAS does software, analytical software, and they have every sensor on their hives. And that's just something they're like, Ben, can we put these sensors on? I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's put the sensors on. So they have Broodminder. They have some sound sensors that they've made and put in. They have a camera on the entrance and they crazy algorithms that count the bees coming and going. Yeah. And they have someone made a giant arts installation in one of their buildings that uses the live feed sound from the beehives to flashlights. And it's just really cool. So just different things like that. Those are two big examples, but there's so many little examples. I'll run into someone, I'm out at dinner and be like, Ben, oh yeah, you know what? I got a bee hotel in my yard and I'm talking to my girls about pollinators and we planted some flowers. So it's that sort of stuff that it's not so tangible generally. And it's hard to measure, but I know it's happening because of the people I talk to and the interactions I have, these small, wonderful little changes in the right direction.
Sounds like everybody benefits.
Yeah. So what's your, from a beekeeping standpoint, what's the biggest challenge in maintaining all of these different yards? I mean, as opposed to having a bee yard on a hillside somewhere, you're going to different companies and having to deal with those. Is there a greater challenge?
Yeah. So logistics, there's certain places we prefer people come and do the work on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So that creates restrictions. Some places, you know, we've had the grass conversation, but it's going to take time. And the grass gets cut twice a week at a quarter inch. So we got to go and keep the grass near the hives at the same length. There's 35 sites during swarm season in the spring. You've got to hit these 8 hives today, but you get that swarm call and now you're 2 sites behind. So we're working long days to deal with that. But probably the biggest one is it's a hate love, and it's the artwork because the artwork is the artwork. There's 2 deeps and 2 supers for every colony, and it all goes together in a very particular way. And you can't, I need a super. No, I need a very specific super for this hive. So in the spring, getting those all out is just a logistical nightmare. And then they come in, keeping them separate. We worked with an industrial kitchen freezer to store all the honey because it comes off in batches. And just managing all that and keeping it all separate and trying to grow and maintain the quality of service that's what's different.
Yeah.
If I just had 150 hives and I could throw any old box on, it'd be dream come true.
I don't suppose you have a storage unit at every one of those locations either, do you?
None, actually.
Yeah.
Oh. Have you had any problems with vandalism or theft or any of that?
Thankfully, not yet.
Knock on wood, then. That's good.
Yeah. Yes. I will say, a lot of, we have some on rooftops that are inaccessible unless you have a code. Some of these places I'm swiping in, I have a badge or I talk to a guard at a security gate. So if someone's, running past a security guard and running 3 acres into the middle of a giant corporate campus to specifically knock over beehives, I guess they were going to do it one way or the other. But we've been lucky so far. We have a few community apiaries, which some of the smaller partners, 30, 50 person organizations, will have one hive in these community apiaries where there's 7, 8 hives. And even those, the community around them seems to really enjoy their bees. We have one in the middle of Durham next to a organization called Bull City Cool. And I know all the neighbors around there. They'll call me if there's a swarm. I'll give them a jar of honey. And they're keeping their eyes on those bees for me.
Nice. So what have we not asked you? What would you like to talk about that we haven't covered?
I guess what's next for us?
Yeah, that's a good,
where are we
yeah.
going? Where are we going next? We started in the Triangle, and we're always adding partners here. Our most recent is Biogen. And a few in the pipeline, Atlanta, same way. That was our second location, adding partners there.
Mm-hmm.
Always adding new partners there.
You sound like a lot of beekeepers. I'm looking for more bee yards.
Yes, always. That's actually, if anyone in North Carolina is listening in the Triangle, I do need a few spots for out yards. Please contact me immediately. That would be very helpful. We just expanded to Richmond, SunTrust Bank. Mm. That's a cool one. It was one of the first green roofs. They put it in the 80s. It's smaller, but it's been there for 20 years. It's very cool. So you can see the Capitol in Richmond, the building that Jefferson built. So we're hoping to continue to expand in Richmond. We have some leads in Charlotte. Some leads in Denver and Dallas, Houston area. So we are aiming to continue to expand and grow. And I think the newest thing that was kind of a response to COVID was we developed a honey tasting experience that people are really enjoying. And anyone can do that, sign up for it. Again, if you were interested, you check out the webpage and email us at info and say, I'm interested in doing honey tasting with our team. So those, I think, are those are kind of the directions we're headed. We're going to try to continue to do what we're doing and doing it well, keeping healthy bees, happy bees, and having happy people that have those bees on their properties.
I like the whole concept of combining the leadership training aspect with the keeping of bees, and that provides a really good social focal point for discussions, and also a group activity. It kind of brings everyone together. I think that's all works well.
Ben, this has been fun. I'm jealous of your job.
Yeah.
You know, I was working on a PhD in an entirely different field, and here I am, happy as can be. Sometimes I'm worried if I'm going to finish that dissertation, but I'm quite happy.
Well, it sounds good. It's a good program, and it sounds like you're doing it right. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Take care now.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Well, that was a fun interview, you know, and it's great to see the corporations jump in and be a part of a solution and using their vast property holdings to help the pollinators and help honeybees.
Yeah, they're doing a good job, and it sounds like they're expanding at a fairly steady but slow but steady rate, which is good. That they're getting their people involved. The part I think I like the best is what they, you know, when you have those meetings, what did he call them? The hive opening meetings. And he's talking about how the bees are working together. And then one employee says, you know, if we had a leader like that, and another employee says, well, if we could make this happen, and they start thinking like a beehive. And I can't think of a better organism to emulate in a business than a beehive and a corporation working together. I think it's a neat idea, and I hope more people pick it up.
Up to the point they kick out the drones, right?
Well, there is that, yes.
It's fun to see that there's another organization in a different part of the country who's helping the corporations develop and work with bees, and that they've actually taken this the next level, and providing leadership training for those companies as well.
Right. I got to tell you, I can't imagine. Ben was talking about the logistics of managing 100+ hives in his city, and suddenly he gets a swarm call, and I was supposed to visit 16 hives this afternoon, and my whole afternoon was sitting on a ladder retrieving a swarm with 50 people watching me. They make it work, but I'm glad I don't have to try and figure it out.
You know, I did like the fact that he's able to call upon some of those companies have a bucket waiting for him, so
yeah.
he can get those 40-foot swarms.
Don't we wish.
Instead of standing there with a clothes basket, shaking a tree, trying to get them to all drop in there. All right, well, that about wraps it up for this episode. Before we go, I want to encourage our listeners to rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, wherever you download and stream the show. Your vote helps other beekeepers find us quicker. Even better, write a review and let other beekeepers looking for a new podcast know what you like. You can get there directly from our website from clicking on the reviews along the top of any webpage. We want to thank our regular episode sponsor, Global Patties. Check them out at www.globalpatties.com. We want to thank Strong Microbials for becoming the latest supporter of the podcast. Check out their probiotic line at www.strongmicrobials.com. And finally, we thank you, the Beekeeping Today podcast listener, for joining us on this show. Feel free to send us questions or comments at questions@beekeepingtodaypodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. Anything else you want to mention, Kim?
Well, you know, just one thing, Jeff. It's you mentioned bee culture, and I don't know if you know it, but they've just released the next edition of their ABC and XYZ of beekeeping. It's brand new. Keith Delplaine and, I don't know, 50 other people, you know, have made contributions to it. Keith was the editor. I've seen it. It's fantastic. If you're looking for the next edition, sign up quick.
I look forward to receiving mine. It'll be fun. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care, Jeff.